I bring you greetings and appreciation from the church that I pastor, which I think most of you would know is your mother church, and actually now is a lot like your sister church. We have a lot in common, and your pastor and you, they're there. It's encouragement to us. He and I, your pastor Chris and me, we like to do this kind of shared teaching series because we both believe that it's important for our churches to hear from different voices, different perspectives. While God's word doesn't change and his truth doesn't change, each of us kind of look at it different. We're affected by it different. And he and I value each other enough that we're kind of going to turn each other loose on the churches that we are entrusted to shepherd. So sorry for that. If you don't think it's a good idea, you can talk to him about that. If you were not here last week, then this is new to you. This is a series that we started here at your church last week. At my church, we're starting it this week. Here's probably the best way I can summarize in a very short way what this series is about. Andy Stanley, a megachurch pastor from Atlanta, says that all of us have all kinds of questions in life about decisions we need to make, relationships we need to form or break, career choices we want to make on down the line. Every day you and I are assaulted by these choices that we need to make, and we want to make them well. And he says there is one and only one question that will lead you true in every question that you ask, every choice that you have to make. He says it is the question, what's wise? Will you find out and work hard to figure out what's wise in the choice that you face? And if you do what's wise, odds are it's going to work out pretty well for you. This, of course, however, kicks the can down the road a little bit. This assumes that you and I know what wisdom is, and we know what it means to act wisely. That's what this series is about, is for all of us to tap into wisdom that is now 3,000 years old in the book of Proverbs, compiled by King Solomon of old, to see if we can become a little more wise together. Next slide, Zeke. Zeke's my slide guy. He and I are going to be of one mind today. Go back one for me, buddy. Go back to the second one. There we go. Perfect. This, by the way, would be my title for the message, if I could. Today we're going to talk about the opposite of wisdom, or if you will, wisdom's absence. Now think about it for a minute. If you knew somebody in your life, maybe a friend, maybe a coworker, and they were characterized by being unwise or making unwise choices, what synonyms or other words would you use as a 21st century American for them acting in an unwise way? Let me suggest that you and I would use words like, well, they're just not educated enough. They are uneducated about a certain subject or about how relationships work. And if they just got more educated, then they'd be smarter or they'd be wiser. Okay. Maybe you and I would use the term they're inexperienced. Once they get a little more time under their belt, live a few more years, get a little more gray hair, then they won't make the choices that they are today. Maybe the worst word that you and I would use about someone who is unwise, and we certainly wouldn't say this to their face, is that they're immature. They just haven't grown up enough yet. Well, here's the thing. Proverbs and wise King Solomon uses a different word. It uses a set of words that in English we would call a fool, or foolishness, or folly. And in the book of Proverbs, this concept or idea, the absence of wisdom, is mentioned 70 times. Now, next slide, Zeke. We need to pause for a moment and consider the word itself, because that word is meant to be. It is intentionally provocative. That means it's there to get a reaction out of you and me, the reader or the hearer. How do you instinctively, emotionally react to the word fool? Here's my first one. That's kind of harsh. In fact, that's so harsh that if my 10-year-old son said that about my 13-year-old daughter, he'd be in trouble. If my wife said it about me, bad example because I'd probably deserve it, right? But you would not, in good conversation about someone that you even had a small amount of respect for, you would never use the word, you're a fool. Here's some English synonyms for that ancient Hebrew word. You're a dolt. You're a simp. You're an idiot. You're a moron. In what conversation is that appropriate for you and I to say? And yet, Solomon says, the absence of wisdom in our life is as strong and as strident as us being a fool, a court jester. Or the opposite is worth being laughed at because we can't make sense of life and we can't make it work. Wow. Really? How else do you react to that? Just the word fool, the absence of wisdom. Perhaps you with me would say, gosh, does anybody really believe they're a fool? I get it that there are places in my life that I need to be doing better or that may not measure up to what God wants me to be doing, but it does not even come close to the zip code in which the word or term fool is home. Does anybody really think they're a fool? Kind of like that is the next one. Maybe I'm a fool and I don't know it. We're going to touch on that actually later. For the greatly self-conscious in the room tonight, I've like ruined your life for the next 24 hours. You're going to lay awake tonight and you're going to wonder to yourself, wow, I kind of thought that things were going okay. My marriage is okay. My kids are okay. I'm managing my money well. My career's okay. Nothing's out of order in my life, but maybe I'm a fool and I don't know it. But honestly, my strongest reaction to this term, other than the first one, is the last one up there on the screen. Aren't we all kind of fools? Haven't we all grown up enough and lived enough to realize that these are not black and white terms? Wisdom and foolishness is not the same thing as are you pregnant or aren't you? You can only be one or the other. But see, so many of the most important words that we value as Christian people and as human beings don't work that way. They are words that fall on a spectrum. Here are some examples of other words from wisdom that we use in that way. Are you a loving person? It probably depends on the day you catch me. Probably depends on what's happened to me in the 24 hours preceding when you asked. Probably depends on my mood. Probably depends on to whom you're asking me whether or not I'm loving. I suspect you're the same way. Are you a gracious person? Are you a forgiving person? Are you a patient person? Aren't we all to one degree or another? Some of that and not some of that. So my premise to you today is that there is not a person in the room for whom the absence of wisdom is not relevant. In fact, if you'll allow me, as a Christian person, you are undergoing over the course of your lifetime spiritual transformation. Paul in 2 Corinthians says that it is like we are being reborn from the inside out, and God's glory is being able to be seen in us more and more and more. It's like there is the dawn of the sun cresting over the horizon of our life, shining from the inside out. This is the process that all Christian people should be undergoing. Allow me to say that in the terms of Proverbs. In the course of your life, what God is trying to do for you is take you from being a fool and make you wise. And all of us are somewhere on the spectrum of being moved from foolishness to wisdom. You, me, everybody. So give yourself the license today to say, okay, maybe there is a place in my life where wisdom has not yet shown up. It has not taken root. And let's see what that might look like. So I mentioned that Proverbs uses these terms, folly, foolishness, fool, etc., over 70 times. But It's not like the Proverbs has 70 independent things to say about foolishness. There's not this giant laundry list of what foolishness is. Actually, those 70 verses tend to center around only a few topics, and it gets repeated over and over again in the Proverbs. I'd like to show you the top three. The top three things that wise King Solomon says represents the absence of wisdom in our life: foolishness. And as foolishness, as we live as fools, as foolishness shows up in our life, we pay the price for it. Here's the first one. Go ahead, Zeke, put up the next set. This is a set of proverbs that I'm going to read for you, then we're going to talk about how they display an absence of wisdom. Wise King Solomon writes, "Fools show their anger right away, but the prudent or wise can overlook an insult. It is honorable to refrain from conflict, but every fool is quick to quarrel. A fool vents his anger fully, but the wise quietly holds it back." Zeke, next slide, buddy. This is one of the top three ways that wise King Solomon says foolishness shows up in our life. Places where wisdom has not yet taken root. And it's about your anger. And we need to pause right there. Because there are people in the room who probably don't think that they're angry people. You don't know me particularly well, but you do know your pastor, Chris, pretty well. And in this regard, he and I are the same. Both of us, if you were to ask our friends and our churches and whatever, gosh, do you think that guy struggles with anger? The answer is going to be no. There is nothing about Chris DeBlay's persona that says he has a hot temper or struggles with anger. Don't ask his wife. That's not fair. I'm saying what everybody sees from the outside. Okay, and I'm the same way. If you were to ask people, gosh, does that guy struggle with anger? The answer is no. I may have other struggles that I wear on my sleeve. That doesn't happen to be one of them. Now, you may be like that. And you may be thinking, oh, gosh, this is a place in my life where apparently I'm wise. And I don't have to worry about wisdom being absent and paying the consequences for that. Well, physiologically speaking, neurologically speaking, me talking about your brain and my brain and every other human brain in the audience, we're all angry. Here's how I know that. There's a part of your brain that when things happen to you that upset you or frustrate you or embarrass you or surprise you, you don't get a choice about how your brain reacts. It's called your lower brain. It sits right here on the top of your spinal column. And every person in the room, the most sedate, the most pleasant, counter the narrative that most Americans are trying to live in their life. What you're trying to do in your life, because you're trying to be an adult, you tell yourself, and you are trying not to be a kid who has to rely on mom and dad anymore, but you want to be a 40 or a 60-year-old or a 30-year-old who is self-sufficient and wise in the ways of the world, is you're trying to be self-reliant. You're trying to be independent. You're trying to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. These are, in America, the people that we admire the most. We admire entrepreneurs who start at nothing and through their own sweat and hard work build something that maybe in the end is worth millions of dollars. We like that story in America. And there may be good things in that story to admire. Here's the problem with that story. It builds on something that is also deeply, innately human, that is deeply, innately wrong. If you go back to the story of where sin entered the human race in Genesis chapter 3, one of the things that you would describe there as you read it is that when we decided to sin and rebel against God, one of the consequences was it made us independent from one another. Instead of living together in unison, depending on one another, caring for one another, we became independent. We became individuals in the worst sense of that word. And what Solomon is describing here is how each of us tend to want to live the same way. I want to believe about myself that whatever problem it is that I encounter, I can figure it out. Because this allows me to have a false story about myself in here. It allows me to think more of myself and my capacities than I ought to. It allows me to think about myself, hey, you can do this. You can live life on your own. You can be that wise person to whom other people appeal, but you don't have to go to others when you're in a time of need or you face a question that you can't answer. What Solomon is describing here is something that all of us in our particular country probably wrestle with a great deal. We are taught to, his phrases are, rely on our own wits. We are taught to be right in our own eyes, to make up our own mind, do our own research, stand on our own two feet. And Solomon says, this is foolishness. It's idiocy. It will undermine you and do you in the end. Huh. How do you think that shows up in your life? When was the last time you asked somebody for help or for advice about something that you had no idea how to answer? I don't mean you went into the conversation asking them to affirm the decision that you already made. That's different. That, frankly, is this. It's not that different from the foolishness that Solomon is describing. No, you went into the conversation having no clue. And in great humility, you had to say, I can't figure this out. I can't make my marriage work after 10 years. We're both so mad at each other. We're distant from each other, and I can't fix this. I need help. Do you sense how that makes you feel small? Human beings, by the way, by their nature, are very small. There is only one gigantic big being in the universe, and it's God, not us. You should not think that you're larger than you are. When was the last time you thought about in your life that you faced anything that you couldn't fix on your own? Anything. I don't care what it is. Maybe you're contemplating a career change, and instead of working it out on your own, you thought, I have no idea what I'm doing here. I do not know what to do. And you appealed outside of yourself for help. Solomon says that's wise. Because in that moment, you are being true to what it means to be human. None of us are complete in and of ourselves. None of us are able to stand on our own two feet without the necessary input of others, the counsel, the love, the perspective of others. And you and I don't want to live that way. We want to believe something about ourselves that is not true. If you were listening, another word that Solomon uses for this kind of foolishness in our life is stubbornness. He will also use the word complacency. That makes me wonder, gosh, when was the last time I changed my mind about something of substance? Where I was sure that I was right, and then through conversation with other people, I figured out I was wrong. And I am different today on how I view this than I was a year ago or 5 years ago. The true sign of wisdom is that you ought to be able to say that about yourself. Not that you have been an immovable object that hasn't changed your perspective on anything of substance in years. That seems to me to be the kind of stubbornness and complacency that Solomon is describing. And by the way, last, if you were listening, this is also why this kind of foolishness is readily apparent to the people around you and not you. Because you don't think you need to listen to them. You're not asking for their counsel. You're not asking for them to input anything into your life except maybe when you need it, a little fun, a little empathy, a little sympathy, and that's it. You're not asking them to build you up with their experience and their wisdom. You've got all you need. And so you are carrying around this foolishness, and so am I. And everybody else knows it. And they're worried about you. At night, your friends say to you and to one another, or about you to one another, gosh, I'm worried about so-and-so. I know they think they've got it all together, but boy, are they missing this or this or this. And because they're your friends, they don't want to hurt your feelings. They're not going to tell you, but they see it more than you do. This is dangerous foolishness. In fact, this is the only kind of foolishness Solomon will say that about. When you try to live independent, self-reliant, be bigger than you are as a human being, guess what? Other people know it and you don't. And that makes it doubly tragic. Here's the last way. Go ahead and put up the next slide up, Zeke. Here's the last big category where the absence of wisdom tends to show up in our life. And we need to know it. As we allow God to change us over the course of our lifetime from being foolish to being wise. Solomon writes so long ago, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the friends or companions of fools suffer harm. The wise woman, or you could say person, builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. Wisdom is a fountain of life to the one who has it, but folly is the punishment of fools." And then forgive the grossness of this, but it does paint an image. Like a dog that returns to its own vomit is a fool that returns to its folly. Go ahead, next slide, Zeke. The first two examples of what the absence of wisdom in our life looks like were specific. It has to do with anger and how we manage our anger. It has to do with self-reliance and stubbornness and not turning to people and leaning on people. This one is more general, but it is very insightful. Proverbs says that oftentimes where we can find the foolishness in our life are the places where we are doing the most damage. Damage to ourselves and damage to the people around us. And I don't know what that is for you, but I got those places in my life, and so do you. The irony that Solomon paints is that your foolish behavior is itself its own punishment. And the more you do it, the more you will pay the price for doing it. You heard that, right, in those verses? What kinds of things in your life do you think are foolish that may be hard to figure out? So let me change the question. Where are you damaging yourself the most in your life right now? Where are you damaging the people around you in your life the most right now? Where are you hurting them? Where are you hurting yourself? Where are they paying a consequence because of your attitudes or behaviors? Where are you? Solomon says, by the way, that oftentimes you'll find these things in repeated behaviors, like that dog that returns to its own vomit, its own spit up. These are habits. These are routines. These are repetitions, things you probably don't even question a whole lot anymore. So when somebody chooses, instead of spending time with their son or daughter in the evening, to sit in front of the television and watch a show that nobody else in the family wants to, this is a routine that Solomon would probably say is foolish. And you're not the only one who's being damaged by that. Your kids are too. When you choose to use words with your spouse that are demeaning or discouraging, not encouraging and uplifting, these are foolish words. They're not just unkind words. They're not just words maybe that aren't fit for a follower of Jesus. I'm going to use Solomon's word about it. They're foolish words. They're foolish words that are in the end their own price tag. You pay, they pay. And you have to know that both pay equally. Where are you damaging yourself the most? Oftentimes, for those of us who know how to manage the exterior of our life well enough that people can think well of us, a lot of these things you're going to find are on the inside. They have to do with attitudes, reactions, responses to things. For example, I'll give you one from my own life. I grew up in a family where there's all kinds of anxiety disorders. We don't know that we knew how to call it that back when my parents were younger, but that's what we would call it today. And so for both of my parents, when something would happen that is surprising or alarming or shocking or out of the norm, the rote response in my home growing up was anxiety. There's a lot of worry, a lot of vocalized worry, a lot of panic, frankly. And you know, I love my mom and dad to death, and they are the same way today in their mid-70s. It has always been that way. And they've never figured out that that's a very damaging response to themselves and to the other people around them. And I'm not throwing my mom and dad under the bus, because guess what? If I'm not careful as a 45-year-old man, when something surprises me, when something happens that I didn't expect, when something happened that I didn't plan, my rote response tends to be anxious. I tend to get nervous. I tend to worry. And I'm the guy who lays awake at night and doesn't know what's going to happen next. And as I worry, my wife worries. And as I worry, my kids worry. Or I shut down and I become detached. And all of a sudden, this repeated behavior that it would be so easy to ignore or excuse becomes something that damages myself and those I care about the most. That's what Solomon's talking about here. Repeated behavior that becomes routine, that hurts you and hurts those around you. This is where wisdom is absent in your life. This is where it's absent in mine. That's how you can find out where you lack wisdom. Go ahead, next slide, Zeke. So what are you going to do with what we talked about today? I think we all recognize that we all, to one degree or another, are fools in the process of becoming wise. This is what God, through His Spirit, is trying to do for us. But we don't just want to hear about it. We want to do something about it. One of the things you can do if you want to investigate this more is you can read more about foolishness in the Proverbs. Back there by where your bulletin is, there's a little slip of paper that gives you a set of verses in Proverbs that you can read this week, and you can consider what Solomon says about foolishness. And you think, okay, Bible reading, I don't get why that, you know, everyone says that, I don't understand why it's so important. Do you know that the leading study of adult spiritual transformation done about 7 years ago found that of all the practices in your life you can do as a Christian person, serving, giving, loving, reaching out, praying, etc., do you know the single most formative thing that you can do to be transformed spiritually, this study found? Just interact with the Bible yourself outside of Sunday morning. This is good, but this is only a start. So Chris and I both, your pastor Chris and I, every week of this series are going to give you just a little set of verses that if you want to read, you can interact with the Scripture yourself about it. But here are some things you can carry with you this week. If in my description of how Proverbs talks about foolishness, maybe you heard yourself. You'd be wise this week to spend time figuring out how you're angry. Where does it show up in your life? What's your anger look like? Because it's there. We all have the impulse. Does it look like foolish anger? You might intentionally this week, if you're one of those independent souls, as I tend to be, you may want to take the step this week to reach out to somebody for help, for a conversation about a difficult subject that you can't figure out, to lean on somebody and borrow their strength because you're weak. Maybe this week you will begin to turn that foolishness into wisdom, and you will stop believing that you're right in your own eyes, and you will realize that in order to be wise, you have to listen to what other people tell you. That would be good. Or you need to spend time this week being observant of yourself and finding where you're doing yourself and other people the most damage. You need to figure out where you are self-damaging or hurting others, because that's your foolishness, according to Proverbs. Now, if you think, okay, I mean, I get it. I come to church. I do this. I enjoy the people. I love the music. I tolerate the sermons. Fantastic. And so for the next 6 weeks, our church, the River Tree, we're going to be talking about wisdom, but I don't get it. Why is it so important? I want to show you why, at least to me, the subject matter of this series, and in this case today, the absence of wisdom, is so important, so meaningful, and potentially life-changing for you and me. Will you put up the last slide, Zeke? This is from the opening of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 13. Solomon simply says about those who seek wisdom, as we will do together over the next 6 weeks, happy are those who find wisdom and gain understanding. And I don't know about you, but I want to be happy. I want to be happier than I am. I want to have it more than the fleeting times that I feel like I do. And I'm betting that you're the same way. You too want to be more happy. You want to feel more blessed. You want to feel more joyous. Then let's find out together. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to learn to live more wise. And let's just see if Solomon happens to be right. Happy are those who find wisdom. Would you pray with me here at the end of the message? Our Father in heaven, there are no